I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two little guys talking about life, that's a good thing.
Swinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is the God Journey.
Well, you're Wayne Jacobson.
And you are Brett Cummings.
Still.
Still doing it?
And we're still on the journey, still living love, still figuring that out.
Me too. In fact, we just stopped the other podcast because we said, there's so much email, let's just go ahead and cover it, and we'll put it up next week.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of good stuff. I mean, we talk about an expanding conversation, and then...
It's just about you and I talking.
Well, the expanded conversation these days, there's some on the forum, there's some people on the forum trying to get that to work. It went through a really bad time, and a lot of people left it. The real conversation goes on the blog right now, the main page of the God Journey. There's 22 comments.
You know, the cool thing is, the real conversation, where it's fruitful, it will always find a place to exist, and it happens. Where someone seeks to dominate it and make it theirs, those tend to dwindle. I love that. I love the reality of that.
I feel bad for those that are going to the forum and going, gosh, where is everybody? But I do like
don't
the fact.
Don't tell them.
The genuine people.
But the other people go there too.
Yeah, I know. That's why.
You can't control that.
You cannot, but you can at least ask and say, look, if you have a need to draw attention to your lifestyle,
get your own website.
Stay off the blog.
Get your own website.
This is from Chris.
It's all about me.
It was on our Facebook page, and yes, we do have a Facebook page because we're right in there. We don't have a Twitter page, though. Thank God still.
You know what? We have hundreds of people following us.
On Facebook.
Even though we tweeted not yet.
You there's a God Journey. I know you have a Twitter account. Is there a God Journey Twitter account?
Oh, I got hundreds of people following me, but I've yet to tweet yet. Yeah. I have an individual one, and then there is a God Journey one. Someone made one for us.
Here's what I love about my life right now. I have no followers. I have none. I have no fans on Facebook. No fans. I have friends. That's all I have. I have friends. And most
I have
of
friends,
my friends
no fans.
Most of my friends I don't know. I don't know most of my friends, but I'm glad to only have friends. This is from Chris on Facebook about Anne Lamott. Plan B said, I love a quote of hers. Laughter is carbonated holiness.
Carbonated holiness.
And I think of you and Brad when I hear that quote.
Sweet.
Isn't that good?
That is sweet.
Carbonated holiness. Somebody wrote the other day, said, I think you guys are being dismissive when you're laughing. They were talking about our...
What?
Yeah, it was a blog comment.
What are we dismissing?
On the plotting podcast, and said, you guys were laughing through that whole article of Kevin's, and I thought that was a way to dismiss him.
You know what? Dismiss. I got to think, I may have been guilty of that.
Why? Really?
Because I didn't agree with what he said.
I
laugh at a lot of things, so I'm not just, it's not just a tool of dismissing.
That's what I tell him. I said, listen, obviously that's the only podcast you listen to because we laugh at everything. We laugh at deep stuff. Heck,
people, I laugh at myself.
We still get in trouble for laughing about so much in the Hell podcast. People are going, how can you guys talk about hell and laugh as hard as you are laughing?
Carbonated holiness.
Because we laugh at everything.
It's carbonated holiness.
Grasping God's heart. We got this comment from Phil in Ohio. I really enjoyed today's podcast, especially at the end, the last 7 or 8 minutes. That was the whole Psalm 109 stuff, I think. I tripped and stumbled over the Old Testament for so long because as I came to know God better and started going to Sunday worship services, it caused me great confusion. When I met a messianic friend and he started getting...
Stop.
Come on, dude.
Got to know God better going to Sunday...
No. As I came to know God better and started going to Sunday worship services, those are not the same thing.
I'm sorry.
Okay. There you go.
I thought, okay.
I understand your confusion.
I had a private joke. I was dismissing something else.
No, he got to know God better and was going to Sunday morning services, and that caused confusion.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I thought I said.
Oh, okay.
That's
was
funny.
It? Oh, I get it now. I'm so thick. Then he said, I met a messianic friend, and he started getting him into the messiness. That's hilarious. Messianic messiness.
Yeah, I've met some of those. Well, it is messy.
I became confused in a different direction with a different light.
I identify that one.
But when I finally started to live loved and realized that what it meant, Boy, this
Come
is
on,
honest.
Bring it out.
When I finally started to live loved and realize what that meant, and as I have begun growing in that for the last 6 months, I can completely relate to what you were saying. It's more than just an old story and a new story. It's the story. It's the truth coming
That's
through
good.
God himself in the flesh with a new light, the true light. Thanks for what you do. You misguided, non-directional, unorganized, heretical people I have never met. Oh, that was so
Woo-hoo!
Funny. Not that I think you said anything you say is heretical. Thought-provoking, maybe. Pretty good. And then George added this.
What were we? Misguided, unorganized,
misguided, non-directional, unorganized, heretical people.
Huh? Okay, non-directional.
Non-directional.
That's not true.
No, none of it's true, and he says that none of it's true, but he thought it was hilarious. We thought it was hilarious, too. That's why we read it. George on the blog said, been catching up on the podcast, quickly found that this thought-provoking. Oh, boy. Oh, this one. He meant one. I'm sorry, I can't read. This is a bad time to do podcasts. I've always had a good snicker at Psalm 109 and could identify with such feeling and realizing that God knows our hearts. We are not fooling him by our more pious communication. However, in listening, one thought evaded my consciousness. I wonder if David could have ever entertained such thoughts after Bathsheba and his face-to-face engagement with Nathan the prophet. That's a good question. Would he have written the same thing? We talked about that last week a little bit. You know, once you hold to a theology and you hold to a principle, and then you find out it doesn't work for you.
David was still commissioning people to be killed on his deathbed.
Yeah, David's a violent man.
No, I mean,
he was.
And I think that's part of what I do love about the scriptures is the honesty that it doesn't sort of gloss over its heroes.
No.
It paints them to be very real people.
Well, that's why the cross was so important. People who think that David could have lived in the light of the cross is the most asinine kind of thinking imaginable.
Oh, what do you really think?
I realize that overstated slightly.
For effect. Now you're dismissing it. No.
Well, I think that's part of our problem with interpreting the old. We go back and say, well, these guys certainly understood.
No, they didn't.
What Hebrews says they could not have understood. The Old Testament sacrifice couldn't dismiss our consciousness of sin. Therefore, all that is under the grid of our own shame and our own brokenness and our own torment. That's what we were living under. And these guys are seeing it that way. So how else could they see it? He said, there came a moment, back to Greg, there came a moment with my walk with the Lord that in some mystical way I became aware of the blackness of my own heart and my own depravity. Though redeemed, I have never again been able to muster up the bravado concerning injustice and the sins of others. Although I'm not blind, I just cannot look any more through the knot hole of that log that is in my own eye.
That's good.
I like the humility that comes from the log in your own eye. Great stuff.
I want to interject a thought.
Yeah, interject away. That's why we're here.
I know. I'd do it anyways. I got in trouble for interrupting you. Some people.
Yeah,
well,
you do sometimes.
Something great and bright. You squirt it up.
My best wisdom is left on the floor of my silence in the overwhelming viciousness of my podcast partner. Just
ha ha ha! Actually, I'm dismissing that.
Oh, interject your thought before I interject some things.
Yeah. You know what I really love is what you said about the Old Testament, them not seeing and them not getting. I don't disagree.
Good.
But
leave it there.
No. But
leave it there.
You got a guy like Moses who, in a moment where face-to-face encounter with God, and God's kind of saying, hey, you know what, the whole promised land thing? You guys go ahead. I'm not going. Moses somehow knows who God is enough, without seeing fully, to say, no, wait a minute. If you're not going with us, we're not going anywhere. And he makes a decision for many million people where he's going like, uh-uh. And when God says one time, I'm going to wipe him out, Moses, not seeing it all.
No, seeing some.
Says, wait a minute. I love that there are moments in the Old Testament that are all centered on the revelatory unveiling of that friendship where you're going like, there was a moment when David, I think Nathan does come to him and he's confronted and all that, and yet he's wanting to build God a house and God says, uh-uh. You're not going to build me a house because you shed too much blood. I'm going to build you a house. And David, in the fullness of understanding it, walks, leaves his palace, goes down and sits in front of the ark, and I think it has one of those intimate moments in the Old Testament.
Oh, you think so?
I do.
Okay.
Where he sits, and he's just, his mind is blown with the fact that God loves her. He says, but God, I'm a dog. He's just going like, he says that about himself.
Wow. I like dogs.
See? It's God backwards. You know?
The agnostic dyslexic.
I love the fact that there are moments where even in the veiled dynamics of a people coming to understand God, there's glimpses where you have that kind of centered on relationship where they go like, you know what? There's something beyond this.
Oh, absolutely.
God is not this Ark of the Covenant. He's not, that's a symbol of something that we don't fully get. And I love those moments where you get glimpses beyond.
And that's what Peter says, definitely they got. They saw things they couldn't understand, but I'm reading Isaiah right now, and there's lots of Isaiah where you're going, ooh, boy, that kind of gives a nasty spin to who God is. But when you know God through Jesus Christ and read back through Isaiah, you don't just say, oh, I can throw Isaiah out now, because God went beyond that. There's lots of richness of who God is in Isaiah. Absolutely. Even in the more brutal moments.
But you can see it with the light turned on.
You can.
As opposed to groping in the dark.
Yes. Because and that's what I like about him saying it's one of the guys who wrote, I forget the name, but it's one story. It's not the old story and the new story. It's one story that culminates in
his story.
Love that. And this from Michael about the Plotters podcast. Remember Plotters?
Yes, the one we dismissed through our laughter.
He decides to quote the Message to us. This is Eugene Peterson. The Message from 1 Thessalonians 4:1.
He decides to quote the Message to us?
Michael does.
Is this good?
There's no letter. It's just a quote.
Okay.
He quotes Scripture. One final word, friends. We ask you, urge you is more like it, that you keep on doing what we told you to do, to please God, not in a dogged religious plod, but in a living, spirited dance.
Aha!
I love that!
Aha! It's not about plodding. Did he send that to Kevin?
He put it on the... I mean, he said Kevin, but he put it on our blog, and then here's what Jeff wrote. You can't help but laugh knowing that Eugene Peterson translated the Message with such phrases as, not in dogged religious plod. Also wrote the book Reverend DeYoung referenced in his article, A Long Obedience in the Same Direction.
I hope I never did
I hate that.
That.
I hate that as a writer.
I hope I never did
I hate that as a writer when your own words catch you.
Yeah. I do think that even the same point that the guy made about David saying, I wonder if he could have prayed, you know, that prayer after Bathsheba. You know, I think if you don't recognize, you know what? This life is a lifelong, eternal journey of our growing to
lifelong,
know him.
Eternal. Okay,
yeah,
that's lifelong. Okay,
sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's a long time.
I'm too tired. I get that. I'm hearing words I've never heard before. See,
but the reality is we're always growing. Hopefully, and you are going to come to a deeper understanding. Things I thought 10 years ago, I held them sincerely.
Yeah.
And some of them, I think, were sincerely wrong.
Yeah, I think it's impossible. I think it's possibly sincerely wrong. Absolutely.
I love the fact that this journey really is fueled by the unveiling of who he is.
In fact, I think most of my wrongness has been quite sincere. I wasn't faking
even
it.
Now.
But Jeff continues after he points out that Eugene Peterson did the book Longer Beasley, and he said, I was such a dogged religious plotter that I had a reformed five-pointed head. I have no idea. And he says, that's no joke.
I'm just picturing
it. I think it's a joke. What do you mean? You had a reformed five-pointed head.
Yeah.
I found out...
Opposite of tulip.
I found out the hard way that the prescriptions so many of the reformed reverend doctors are writing can do a lot of harm. This nearly 50 revolutionary... nearly 50-year-old revolutionary... may not be so young and sexy, but now I'm no longer plodding like a blind guy in a ditch. Jesus opened my eyes, and now I'm seeing some beautiful sights on the God journey.
Love it! Love it! Oh, you might be old and sexy.
Boy, I tell you, those Calvinists, they're getting a lot of press these days. Those young Calvinists trying to, you know, get out there and beat the body of Christ into submission.
If you step back and look at things...
God bless them!
If you step back and look at things sociologically, do you know what...
Sociologically?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a word.
I know. And it's a perspective, too.
That's actually right.
Yes,
there's
I know.
No extra G in there.
Thank you.
A confluence. Which was last week's podcast. I forget.
But I think in a present situation where everything is being sort of jumbled about and people aren't sure what to do, there is a subtle, it's not so much subtle, there's a powerful seduction of wanting the kind of clarity that some theologies pretend to offer. And I think that's why you see a resurgence of it, is that there's a sense of trying to anchor down, this is right, all else are wrong, and it's almost like arrogance is inviting, we're promising you this kind of clarity, this is right, this is holy, everyone else that's in that gray land, forget it. And I think that's some of what is the attraction, is the fact that people are, and they don't know what's going on. And something that promises them a clear-cut system that they can work, a lot of times people prefer that.
I think certainty is always the preference for people who don't really engage the depth of who God is.
And you know what's yucky about it? Is you can do it without a relationship.
Yeah. And that's just as true of the Calvinist sovereignty guys as it is the love message, grace message guys that do the same arrogance and the same certainty. Yeah, it's the same. The problem is not what you believe in that construct. The problem is how you approach other people.
Someone.
What are you willing... I think this is always the judgment of our character. What are you willing to do to people, especially when you know you're right? Especially when you think you're right. Let me say it that way. What are you willing to do to people? And that, to me, is the greatest revelation of a person's character. If you're willing to push, cajole, bang on people to have your way, you don't have a clue who God is. And you can talk about how much you love him and he loves you, but you don't mean it. You just don't mean it. Not yet. I'm sorry. Okay, let me get that out. Because people say there's too much angst in my life. And there is. There is at times.
Just exhale.
Wild and Free podcast. The report on the conference and worship folks and music people. Russ said this. The greatest conviction of sin I ever experienced came about 2 months after I got off the treadmill. It was when I realized that most of what I had done in the church was to get approval from strangers. Honestly, I was happiest when I had people recognize me on the street as that guy who plays the guitar at church. The acid test was when my wife and I went from being leaders in the church to just following him. Suddenly, I had no desire to play the latest Chris Tomlin song because I knew that neither God nor my wife would be impressed. And I like some Chris Tomlin songs. That's not a diss on old Chris. But I tell you what, when that's your deal, being on the stage and being the performer and having the light in your eyes is your deal. I love when that gets unmasked.
Yeah.
I do.
It, preferably in private.
Yeah, preferably. And preferably not by the podcast.
You know, I think when you know that, when you know what God thinks of you, and it's not just the pretend self-talk, but there's a confidence of the fruit of a dialogue and a real relationship, that is sort of the antidote to whatever seduction's wooing you onto that stage. You don't need to.
Yeah.
And talk about freedom. Gosh, I remember when it was like, well, why'd they ask that guy to speak? You know, thinking like, you should have asked me. You know, if you were really spiritual, you'd understand I had the Word of God.
Man, that's mocking.
I mean, did you
mocking. I see the mock meter rising.
Yep.
Not quite. It's getting there.
I look at that and it's like, it's no different than the playground at an elementary school. It's just a bunch of little kids trying to go, am I valuable? Will somebody affirm me?
Yeah.
And I think our sin invites us to that place. Yeah. Our religion invites us to a different guised place. It's all the same need, trying to get it met in in not a lasting way. That's the way. I had a word and it escaped me.
You're a tired guy.
I am.
You're a tired guy. And I'm an angry guy, so it's all much of a
laugh.
I'm kidding.
Tired and angry.
Oh.
I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
I have an angst for people who pretend to live loved and just beat people up in the dark. That's my deal.
Yeah, I think that's a certified angst.
Yeah, good. I hope it is. Ken wrote this. I used to play guitar in the worship band when I was in the box.
Good for you, Ken.
Because of that, friends were trying to get me back into church, keep inviting me to the ones who look exactly like that North Point video you talked about. I did go one Sunday. Honestly, it was like being at a taping for a TV show. There were roving cameramen on stage, getting close-ups of the musicians to flash on the jumbo screens above. The audience was constantly cajoled into the stand-up, sit-down, clap-hands, sing-along routine. My wife calls that, Simon says. She hates it. Stand-up, sit-down, fight. And I finally quit singing, though, because I couldn't even hear myself. All I could hear were the musicians on the stage. If God showed up, I missed him, probably because he slipped by unnoticed during the commercial for Wednesday night sermon series. As feel-good Christians entertainment, it was fine, I guess, but as worship to God? It seemed to me like we were really worshiping the worship itself. Everything we did was to serve the service.
Oh, that's a turn of a phrase.
Oh. I know you know some of these guys who do it genuinely, but we had a few people, right, who've been doing it saying, maybe not so much. Duran, good friend of ours from Nashville. You got to have barbecue with that boy again, hey?
Yeah.
Remember Duran?
Yeah.
As one who played the musical guru manipulator on church staffs for years, I can remember how empty I would feel most Sundays. In fact, I heard this statistic when I was a pastor. Most pastors will say Monday is the most depressing day of their week. The day after you've been the star on the stage is this big drop-off of emotional rancor as you sit with yourself on Monday and not on
Monday. Oh, I thought it was because everyone had roast preacher for lunch.
I don't think that was it. Especially the ones I talked to who thought they'd done a really good job and didn't care what people thought. Said, I can remember how empty I feel most Sundays, even in the middle of pushing the right buttons from one song to the next. I often wondered if anything we were doing was truly derived from a pure motivation. Oh, sure, we wanted people to experience Christ and enjoy cathartic moments in an atmosphere of worshipful expression. He puts quotes on atmosphere, that's why I mocked it a little. Because you couldn't do air quotes on a podcast. But usually on Monday at staff meetings, the majority of our time seemed to be spent evaluating how smoothly the machine operator, how slick and effective the presentation was. Did we close the deal? And if not, what did we need to tweak? At least to me, there seemed to be only token interest in the relational, in the actual relational part of where people were in the whole worship experience. Admittedly, this created a climate of uber performance or a constant striving for more and more and of the wow factor in our worship experiences. I came so focused on the quality and standard of my performance as a leader that I began to look to how well I sang or how dramatically I interpreted each song as a benchmark to determine the success of our gathering. People's lives truly being impacted by a loving Savior was just a delightful bonus. Love this podcast. As always, fellas, keep swinging.
You know what is frustrating?
Yep. I know lots
you
of
do. Things. You know lots of things. Yeah, fill the list.
Well, go ahead and tell me what's frustrating for you today.
Thank you. That's so kind of you.
It's good. I'm just trying to keep you awake. That's
Thank
all
you.
I'm doing.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, see, it's a bit of work.
In the midst of all of the overperformed, overproduced dynamic, there still is a loving God who is there that's real, and that's a point of connection for some.
This moment of balance has just been brought to you by Brad Cox.
No, but that's not what I find frustrating.
Okay.
What I find frustrating is how would you ever evaluate whether this was or wasn't fruitful when all of the focus is on the service, the attendance, and the things that are there, as opposed to, does anyone ever graduate into their own place with God? Or are they always a subset of the deal we're doing?
Yeah, the Willow Creek thing we did a while back, they found out that some of their most growing people weren't coming anymore. And they thought that was a bad thing.
Yeah, I know, but that's where I go like, gosh, you might be doing all of this sincerely, and it might be really wonderful, but the evaluation of whether that is or isn't so is not, was there the wow factor on the service, but is there a difference made in someone's life that says, I encountered God and thereby was different, and now I am doing... That's not in the frame of discussion.
No, it's not.
And
can't be.
If they were doing that, you wouldn't know because they left. They're someplace else. And because, I mean, I remember
I would love it. I would love it. See, it's a little bit frustrating that God shows up at places like these to touch people's hearts.
See, I don't find that frustrating. That was regular for us.
I don't either. I'm grateful he does at one level. At another level, for people who've just been lulled to sleep by it, who really think
it's
that
like
now
sitting in a jacuzzi.
Their goosebumps are proof that God is here, when that's not proof that God is anywhere. Just you're having an aesthetic. I get goosebumps at a really good concert. If the song's amazing, you can get goosebumps without God. That's just a human response. But that God makes himself known there is great. But I agree with you that people who really get to touch him may not find them having the persistent need to come back every week and sit there again.
See, that's, I think the thing, and it's not so much, I find a need to validate somebody out there, but it's like, we had a pretty amazing deal of a church service for a while. And I got to say, was saturated with the actual presence of God, where people would come and be touched. And amidst all of that, we had all the accoutrements of people who could, quote, overproduce it. And I thought that was silly and bunk. But at the same time, God still was in the midst of what was going on. But to me, the real issue is when and who graduates from their need to be here because they found him and now they go on.
Like you said, not even part of the discussion.
See, that's where it's like, to me, I don't want to get lost in the banter about the, well, was it cool? Was it not cool? Was it? I mean, it's like, I don't care. Was he there, and is anyone learning relationship in such a way that they don't need you? To me, that's success.
That would be a great way, I think, to see it. A university would not think, we've got the same student here on the 12th consecutive year.
Yeah, they'd say, maybe, I did something wrong.
Maybe we're not doing our job. Maybe we need to rethink what we're doing. Because the success is the graduation.
Yes.
You're sending people out into the world, skilled, equipped, to do what it is that they're going to do in the world, and that's all good.
But real universities know it's not just even those that graduate. It's the fact that people that went through their ranks went on to do something.
Yeah.
That's where the alumni of a certain institution actually does the payback of blessing the reputation of the institution because they did something out there.
Yeah.
And having talked to a number of the presidents of those things, that's their passion, typically, where they're going like, it's not just, gee, we graduated 900 this year. It's more like,
what are those 900 doing?
Yeah.
And
you're
how
still
can
like,
we help them? Can we still help them? Thank
like,
God.
Gosh, if in a university structure, the people that lead that can recognize that, what's the deal with the pastors who can't?
It's not part of the discussion.
Why?
Because my success as a pastor is measured not by how many people I graduate. It's based on how many people sit here on each Sunday morning.
No, it's not.
No, I'm sure that will go out to all the people who most of you. Unfortunately, not sure
okay,
a lot of those people.
Send emails. I want to have that dialogue. Because
but you know, one of the best emails I ever got from a brother was the Jake book, So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore, was still on the web. It was still being written. I got an email from a guy that said he had been a failure all his life as a pastor in his own mind.
Because of that criteria.
Because he couldn't hold on to people. But he was sitting there reading that book, and God just brought back to his mind all the people that had been part of his life for a season and how all those people went on into incredible, fruitful engagement of who God was. And he said, he's in his 70s or something. He said, I've been crying all morning saying I now see what God was doing in my life that I couldn't see for 50 some odd years.
Yeah, but wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. I do think we have.
You're not going to butt me again, are you?
I am going to butt you. Not you, but. The whole reality is I think we have this seduction of a false god of needing my life to be defined by, quote, success. Not only do we have the definition wrong of what it is, but we have this inordinate need for that to be the measure.
Yeah.
I had this wonderful film guy, his father, Bud Kaiser, and he's dead now, but he's Emmy-winning producer years back, and these guys in this, they went, well, let's not send him to those people. Let's send him to Father Bud, because he's that altruistic little guy. I mean, they just thought they ought to do me a favor. And they were. Because one of the things he said to me, he says, Brad, anchor this as true. We're not called to be successful. I am called to be obedient. And then leave the results to God. Here's the guy saying that to me who's got like 12 Emmys up on his, and he was pointing that out, saying, I'm not called to try to get those. I'm called to do what God, and if those happen, that's to his credit. But I get the well done, good and faithful servant from the obedience. The results of that, the scope, the sphere, the scale, all of that is really the gift and grace of God.
And the 10 million budding filmmakers out there in the world, all of who, which write me with some recurring angst, are saying, yeah, that would be easier to do after you got the Emmy.
But he didn't get it by going after the wrong thing.
I'm hearing you. I absolutely agree with what you're saying. I think that's the essence of it. The essence of a grapevine is to be fruitful. And the essence of fruitfulness for a grapevine is the grapevine doesn't benefit from the fruit. The fruit goes somewhere else. I think this whole idea of not graduating people is if fruit is born in our midst and then it falls off, like an apple falls from the tree, then the tree goes down and says, no, 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 you have an obligation to be here. And they take the apple back up on the tree. And that's it's not being fruitful in any way that it needs to be fruitful.
That's a fundamental problem of understanding who and what you are. If you're supposed to bear fruit, the fruit is not to be consumed by you. How stupid is that?
That's my point. That's as simple as it is.
I mean, your image is great as far as reaching out. No, I'm sorry. That's not for you. That's mine. Trying to hold on to your fruit. What the heck is that?
Or why are you running away from the tree? I bore you. And okay, I know we're laughing about this. I remember doing that. I remember a couple that came to our church when I was pastoring. Their marriage was absolutely devastated. They were going to get divorced. It was horrible. I spent hours with that couple, brought that marriage together, helped them find Jesus again. Jesus was all real, all good in their life. And just as they got ready, so like we could use them for ministry in our hut, they felt called to go back to the place that had, in my mind, messed up their marriage in the first place. I remember being all...
Come back. You're my fruit.
No, see, I was smart enough not to do that to them, but I went to God going, this is not right. This is not right.
Somebody else stole your apples.
I did this. I built these people up. These people are going to be here benefiting our deal. And I'm saying all that to God. And I think the best thing about saying stupid stuff to God is it sounds really stupid when you say it to him.
Hopefully.
Yeah, well, for me, it mostly does. I sit there going, okay, this is not good. I'm telling God, these are my people. They belong to me. And you don't have the right to put them in your vineyard where you want to put them. Okay, the fruit's not for me. That's the point. Yeah, I think that's the point of it. So that's why I think that whole obligation, you got to be here plotting, is just about the dumbest thing you can say to someone.
Well, this is being a little more philosophical.
With apologies to Kevin.
We're called to be stewards of things, not owners. And I do think that that's not just a nuanced difference. It's like, you know what? If all of it comes from God, is by God, and back unto God, my engagement with it, I didn't come up with it, that it didn't come from Him. I can't do anything with it apart from what He enables me to do. And it's not going to achieve or do anything apart from the breath of Him if it was authored.
I know, but people hear stewardship and they think ownership. The parables Jesus told, planted the vineyard, I want you to take care of it. And then He comes back and they're going, how do we steal it? we kill the son, we get the vineyard. I know,
but there's a problem. It's wrong.
Absolutely.
And they navigated past the boundary of reality where you're just going like, you know what? Inasmuch as I'm called to be a part of something that He's doing, the minute I grab onto that, mine, is the minute that thing is destroying you as opposed to your being a blessing through it.
And you're tainting it. I do think the need to possess a gift is an abuse of the gift.
Yeah.
And once people go there, then ugly things happen. They just do. And I think as long as our significance is in ourselves, we have to own stuff. We have to grab stuff. When our passion, I think this is one of those living love things we talked about last week, when our desire is to really live loved in the universe, we want God to get all that. We want people's hearts to be drawn to God, not Wayne Jacobson. The glory's got to be there, not here. And that's not something, well...
But not in that weird way.
Not that humble, you know, yeah, God be glorified, not me. It's not that. It's
wasn't that good.
It's the passion is for people to be inside that and to realize everything about my life is a gift.
Yeah.
Everything good in my life is a gift. I didn't earn it. I don't qualify for it.
Yeah.
It's not a reward for, you know, being a good fruit on a tree. Though, if I could be good at something, it would be being a fruit, most likely.
Don't leave me.
Chris wrote this. We don't got much time left. We still got 500 emails, but thank you all for writing.
Well, we at least did like 3 or 4.
Well, we've done a bunch, actually. And are you on email bankruptcy still?
I don't know.
Hopelessly lost. Chris wrote this. Although I was not at this conference, speaking to the house church conference I was at, I attended in the past. As with Wayne's experience, I also have had the great privilege to meet and build relationships with some wonderful people in the house church realm, including a few who are out ahead seeking the Lord and how to facilitate what they feel led to. That said, over the last number of years, I found myself drifting further away from the house church perspective, and I must say that it is making all the difference for me. Not that their expression or my relationship with it was unpleasant. It's just that there was a gnawing feeling within me that I had been down that path before, rebuilding and reaffirming the same process all over again, but with a newer, fresher flavor. I think any movement we might get involved in where we recognize greater freedom to learn and worship Him is extremely appealing, especially in comparison to the structures many of us were in the process of filtering out of. We are in the process of filtering out of. But our very best in trying to build a format for His eternal purpose is, in the end, futile.
Futile?
Oh, gosh. We need a nap. In the end, is futile. That's a little bit...
Futile. That's awesome. I think you just named the podcast.
like ignoramus. Like that? Sorry. Excuse me. I've lost my partner. As the modern and future expression of the living body of Christ seeks to find and understand how He speaks to us individually and corporately, I believe we will continue to stumble through movements and ways and expressions until we hopefully begin to become more fully awake to His purpose within each of us. If my personal experience and what I read of Paul and others is an indication, there is a deeper drawing on the Holy Spirit which makes our dependence on forms and structures, even simplified ones, for our relationship and ineffectiveness and effectiveness in Him, less and less relevant in our lives.
Yeah.
That's what we've been talking about all along.
Yeah.
When you don't know Him, structures are so important. And when you know Him, you don't want to put your dependence in the structure. It's not to say structure's evil. We can have structures. Not
no,
a problem.
But our dependence isn't there. He provides Himself as structure.
Yeah.
I think we totally miss that.
I do.
I think our need for it and our craving for all this organization is because we're not in that, quote, Brian Vance union.
Well, Brian, fruitful Brian. Weird.
Brian Branch Union.
May in the mouth.
The whole idea is that the structure of this is my dependence on Him.
That's the point.
And if I do that, then I don't have to try to overdo something else. If your job is to depend on Him and my job is to depend on Him and He is that structure, you'll have everything that you need.
Yeah.
If I'm worried about that, so I'm going to organize it without Him, you might have the most beautiful structure on the planet without any life.
Yeah, and I would say that every bit as much about house church structures as I would about podcasts. I don't think podcasts are evil. But if you're becoming dependent on Brad and Wayne's voice and you can't make a move in your life now without knowing what would Brad and Wayne say
That's
about
this? Fertile.
Then you are very fertile at so many levels. Anyway, Chris continues. I sure do hope my pals in the house church setting don't see this or Wayne's comment as a personal slam. Me too, because we don't do slamming here. I'm not into any slamming. I know that when
just so you know, in case you thought it was slamming, it's not.
I know that when I... Yeah, just because you got that handprint on your cheek doesn't mean you were slapped. I know that when I first read Wayne's article, Why House Church Isn't the Answer, it made me a little mad because, hey, I was a house churcher, and he's telling me I'm missing it. Funny how that which...
What's a house churcher?
I don't... It's like a birther. Funny how that which has the opportunity to offend can also be the path to something else. Just saying.
See, those handprints are not a slap. It's an invitation.
Yeah, I still don't want to be slapping people. I tried to be very careful when I was there, even careful in my comments about it, because I love the passion of people I meet there. I worry that that passion will be absorbed in trying to create a structure that just becomes one of the 5,000 million hanging on a shelf in church history of this way we'll work to bring God to the world. When God works so well himself to bring himself to the world, how do we come around that?
Well, I think one of the biggest and best gifts that is missing but needs to be in a lot of, quote, leaders is that thing called restraint. John the Baptist, when he recognized Jesus was on the scene, he said, I must decrease. And you're just going like, I think if we want Jesus to be on the scene.
That's King James, isn't it? Isn't the New, I'm just the New Translations? I must increase so that he must increase. That's the New Translations. That's how we
think of it. Pants on fire, that's fruitile.
That's how we think of it, though.
It is.
I know what you're saying. I agree with you totally.
But
I don't know why I'm talking two octaves higher than normal.
Yeah, you're short sighted.
Yes. Okay. Let's come back to something more futile. Frutal.
That's a great word. I think that if more leaders recognize the call at times to restraint, where it's like, yeah, you could, but if you do, someone else won't. And the deal is equipping and developing them. So if you do all this, and you keep doing all this, and that's your key for being awesome.
Yeah.
Then you will develop no one.
And if you need people to follow you, you will find people who will.
You're sick.
But you will
find people
who will.
Yes.
But don't. Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.